was back home with all of my friends, and I was panicked. I never wanted to be there again. But that didn't make sense because it was the only life I'd ever known. I didn't calm down until I woke up and heard my roommate snoring. It was the most beautiful sound. It meant I was still free. I think all those years I was there, I was holding my breath, and it wasn't until I got out that I realized what it really was to breathe.
You don't miss them at all?
Icheb asked. Gwyn shook her head. I miss my Leedy sometimes. Mayla.
Leedy?
She's like a member of my family, but we're not related. She and my mom have always been friends since before I was born. I've known her forever. Her face is one of my first memories. I always felt like she knew me, but not in the same judgmental way my mom did. I could tell her anything. Tears began to well in Gwyn's eyes. I'd give anything for her to be here right now. She'd know what I need to do. Gwyn pushed herself off the bio bed that was going to be her home for the foreseeable future and began to pace the main medical bay. Clearly sensing her anguish, Icheb remained in the chair beside her bed, giving her what passed for solitude. There were several private rooms down the main hall that broke off the rear of the bay. Gwyn wandered down, pausing at the door to Nancy Conlon's room. The lieutenant looked so peaceful. Gwyn knew that was a lie. She understood that some of what she was enduring was the result of her desire to help Conlon, and even though she might have justifiably been angry and blamed Conlon for her current condition, she didn't. Everything she was suffering paled in comparison to Conlon's troubles. At least there were ways for Gwyn to survive this. That might not be one of Conlon's options. Fresh tears threatened, so Gwyn moved on. A few doors down, a warmly lit biochamber sat in an otherwise darkened room. Something small floated inside the chamber.
Icheb?
She called. Moments later, he was by her side.
Are you all right?
I am. What's that? She asked, pointing to the chamber. Icheb shook his head.
I don't know.
Gwyn entered the room and checked the chamber's display.
That's a child, she said in awe. That's Lieutenant Kim and Lieutenant Conlon's baby. But what is it doing here?
Icheb had remained in the doorway.
I'm not sure, but I don't think we should be in here.
Suddenly, the urgency of Sal's requests for her aid made more sense. There had always been more to this than Conlon's life. She had been pregnant. They might have been trying to save more than her life with Gwyn's cells. Gwyn lifted her hand and placed it on the chamber. The being floating inside was so tiny, so fragile. An instinct Gwyn had never before known she possessed rose within her. She wanted to protect this tiny creature. She wanted it to live and thrive. She didn't know it. She couldn't. The same empathic senses that drew her so powerfully to the individuals that were potential mates also connected her to this tiny living being. But there was a difference. She didn't need to be anything other than what she was for this child. It had no needs or desires of her other than protection and devotion. For a moment no longer than a breath, she was fascinated, standing on the edge of a cliff. It would be the easiest thing in the world to step off and fall.
Gwyn,
Icheb said more forcefully, pulling her from her reverie. She turned to him, as if seeing him for the first time.
I need to talk to my mother.
XV. Vesta. The large conference room, built to hold most of the command staffs for the entire fleet, was full. Captain Chakotay entered and immediately searched the room for Admiral Janeway. The conference tables were surrounded by officers, although none of them sat. Each featured small holographic displays, and each table was configured to study one of the many problems the fleet was currently facing. At the far end of the room, Seven, Glenn, and Elkins were staring at a hologram of the planet upon which Chakotay had placed so many hopes not that long ago. A good old-fashioned mystery.
A chance to be explorers again. It had all sounded so promising at the time. And maybe a little over a day of that kind of tranquility was enough. Whether it was or wasn't no longer mattered. It was going to have to be. Even from this distance, Chakotay could see that the veins of ore that composed so much of DK-1116 were highlighted on the model. No doubt these three had been tasked with determining exactly what would happen when the new veins that had begun to grow roughly 15 hours earlier completed that process. Most of the hypotheses being floated thus far included the destruction of the planet and the fleet. Another station where Lieutenants Kim and Bryce stood displayed a section of the outer spherical asteroid field surrounding the binaries and traced the patterns of the strange new energy waves originating from one of the larger rocks out there directed toward the planet. In the last few hours, they too had increased in strength, but also seemed to be growing more focused on one of the planet's polar regions at regular rotations governed by the motion of both the asteroids and the planet. A third group, which included Commander O'Donnell and Lieutenants Velf and Benoit, was analyzing the sensor feeds of the alien substance that had first attacked Ensign Gwyn and later the shuttlecraft Van Cees. Chakotay hadn't had a chance to review that footage in detail yet, but even at this distance, it was no mystery to him why Kim had ordered it destroyed. Commander Torres stood at the largest table with Admiral Janeway and Commander Fife. Their display featured a close view of the landing site where Lieutenants Patel and Lazarin and Ensigns Japel and Vincent had been lost, side by side with one of the planet's exposed, desolate plains. The team's comm feed had been patched to Vesta shortly after it had been recovered. It was unsurprising to Chakotay that this was Catherine's focus, making sure all of her people made it off this planet alive. Chakotay took a brief moment to realize that what he had hoped most to gain from this mission, true synthesis among the members of the fleet's different vessels, was happening before his eyes. It didn't matter that they were no longer on the surface of DK-1116. They were all working together as one. As Chakotay took this in, Captain Farkas entered the room and made a beeline toward Admiral Janeway. Pulled from his thoughts, he quickly followed.
All of the away teams, except the one, have been retrieved, Admiral, Farkas said with palpable relief.
Excellent,
Janeway said, then turned her attention to Chakotay.
Do we have an estimate?
Chakotay nodded.
Commander Paris has done the calculations, and assuming whatever happens out there falls within the range of our current models, if Vesta, Galen, and Demeter depart the system at full impulse and activate their slipstream drives once they are beyond the outer asteroid field, they will most likely survive any cataclysmic blast.
What happens to the numbers if they fail to make it through the outer field in time?
Their odds of survival fall to the high 60% range.
What about Voyager?
Farkas asked.
Assuming Voyager departs now, she'll reach the outer asteroid field easily at maximum warp. But we can't do that, can we?
Voyager can't depart for at least 2 more hours, Janeway replied.
Why not?
Farkas asked.
Elana,
the Admiral said, bringing her fleet chief into the circle.
We think we can use the same open line Patel used to re-establish communications, to embed a transporter beam and bring her team to the surface.
How long can that possibly take?
Chakotay asked.
We can't do it from orbit, Torres said. We have to send a shuttle down with at least 2 officers, a pilot, and a transporter specialist. Honestly, I'd like to fill that role, she added.
Why?
Chakotay asked.
We have to land on the surface at the precise location where that hard line terminates, excavate it, and establish a transporter link there. In addition to some specialized soil displacement devices Commander Fife has provided us, we'll need pattern enhancers, a portable force field generator and transporter, and an atmospheric processor. There's no active biodome in that area, so we'll be working in EV suits, and when we transport them up, we'll have to bring them to the surface one at a time, into the area protected by the force field and filled with atmosphere. It's the only way we're going to be able to get them. I won't risk bringing up their gear, given that I'll be manually adjusting their patterns every step of the way. I don't want to add any unnecessary complications to the buffering sequence. As soon as they materialize, we will need to relay their signals immediately to Voyager's transporter room to get them safely back on the ship. The force field protecting them from the exposed surface will have to be dropped the moment the transport beam is activated. The timing will be tricky. It will take a few minutes to reset the system for each of them, but once we have them, the pilot and I can transport back to Voyager directly from the surface.
And then we run? Janeway asked.
Yes, Admiral, Torres replied.
Let's get started, Chakotay said. Have you selected a pilot?
I was hoping to use Gwyn, Torres said. I think Tom should take Voyager's helm.
Gwyn is not going to be able to help us this time, Chakotay said. She's still recovering from her previous injuries.
Torres shook her head. Damn it.
B'Elanna, this fleet is filled with capable pilots, Janeway chided her.
The buildup of energy on the surface is increasing every second we stand here talking, Torres said. I don't think it will be a problem on site, but there is a chance that as it increases, it will interfere with our transports from the surface. We might all end up needing to pile back into the shuttle to escape. I don't want a capable pilot. I want the best, Torres said.
That's Tom,
Chakotay said.
Torres nodded.
I wish I didn't agree with you about that.
If things get tough, I can take Voyager's helm, Chakotay added. But if you'd rather both of you weren't on the away team, I'll take the shuttle controls.
Torres shook her head. No, we've got this.
How long do you need to prepare before you launch? Janeway asked.
An hour, Torres replied.
As quickly as possible, please, Janeway ordered.
Understood, Torres said, and hurried out of the room.
Lifting her voice, the Admiral said,
Attention, everyone.
Within seconds, the ambient bustle fell to silence.
We have officially overstayed our welcome in this system. Commanders Glenn and O'Donnell, return to your ships and prepare to set course out of the system. Commander Paris will forward each of you your flight plans and rendezvous coordinates. Captain Farkas, as soon as Voyager's officers are transported back, you will set course out of the system as well. Train all of your available sensors on the planet. Whatever happens here, assuming we survive, we'll want to get the best possible images of the spectacle. Voyager will follow you as soon as we have retrieved our last away team.
You're staying behind, Admiral? Farkas asked dubiously.
A tight smile flashed over Janeway's face.
We're going to make it, Captain. All of us.
Chakotay wasn't sure that Farkas understood, but he did. There were 50 moving parts to Torres's plan, and at some point it was highly likely that someone was going to have to decide who made it off the surface and who didn't. Chakotay would do it if he had to, but Catherine wasn't going to let him. She was going to take full responsibility for any deaths this day brought, even if that included Tom and B'Elanna.
Okay, Farkas said. We'll see you on the other side.
Go, Janeway ordered.
Captain Farkas left the conference room quickly, already formulating the dozens of orders that still needed giving before they could set course.
Farkas to Dr. Sal,
she said, tapping her comm badge. To her surprise, the computer responded for her.
Dr. Sal is not on board.
Where the hell is she?
Dr. Sal transported to the Galen 16 minutes ago.
Shaking her head, Farkas called to Roach.
Malcolm?
Go ahead, Captain.
We've got a number of passengers who will be on their way back to Voyager in the next few minutes. Contact Commander Paris and confirm our course and prepare to break orbit as soon as we're cleared.
Yes, Captain.
Oh, and Malcolm, contact Dr. Sal on the Galen and tell her to get her ass back here immediately. I want her on board when we depart.
Understood.
Galen. Ensign Atar Gwyn slapped the side of the comm panel before her to improve the quality of the sound of Devi Patel's voice. It kept breaking into static with periodic harsh buzzing noises. She had no idea why Patel wanted to speak to her now. The timing couldn't have been worse. But when the call had come through, the doctor had brought her to one of the medical bay's private rooms and then returned to his lab, where he was conferring with Dr. Sal and Counselor Cambridge. Icheb waited just outside the room, her only tether to sanity. But the obvious stress in Devi's voice served to focus Gwyn even better than the presence of Icheb.
Gwyn, can you hear me?
I'm here, Devi. What's wrong? Gwyn slapped the panel again and finally the buzzing ceased. It was still distorted. Devi sounded like she was speaking from the far end of a distant tunnel, but at least her words were relatively clear.
Nothing. Everything's fine. I just wanted to... That is... I heard you were injured in a shuttle accident.
Devi was lying about being fine. Even had her empathic abilities not been on maximum overload at the moment, Gwyn would have been able to sense that.
Devi, cut the crap. What the hell is happening to you? We don't have a lot of time. My survey team got ourselves in a bit of trouble on the planet. A rescue team is on its way, so I asked them to give us a short comm window while we wait.
A rescue team? Why can't they just transport you up?
We're beneath the surface. There's a lot of interference. Lazarin helped me rig this comm channel. They're going to use it to piggyback a transporter signal.
That sounded terrifying. But Gwyn had witnessed enough Starfleet technological miracles to understand that if they were trying it, it would most likely work.
Good,
Gwyn said, hoping some false bravado would reach and inspire her friend.
I'm sure you'll be fine.
Patel paused for a moment. Gwyn wasn't sure if the feed was degrading again or not.
Devi? I'm here. We found so much down here. It'll take years of analysis just to categorize the alien species we discovered. And the technology the Edremaya left behind is incredible. The Seven of Nunonium was just the tip of the iceberg. It's a legacy to be proud of.
Gwyn smiled in understanding, even though she didn't have the first clue what or who the Edremaya were. Devi was getting cold feet as the moment of rescue approached and wanted to make sure someone would be able to acknowledge her achievement in case things went south. Just make sure I'm there when you give the captain your report. And Seven. I want to see the look on their faces, Gwyn said. Patel's next words came out in a rush.
The thing is, they can't prioritize transport of our technology. Our tricorders, our data, it's all going to be lost. I can't begin to recreate it from memory, and it's too important. Starfleet needs to know what we found down here.
A knot began to twist itself into being in Gwyn's stomach. So transport the data now over the comm line, while you're waiting for your rescue, Gwyn said.
not willing to risk a potential overload with a data dump.
Gwyn's pulse began to race. It might have been the hormones raging through her body, but she doubted it.
Devi, listen to me, Gwyn insisted. If they can't bring up the data, don't worry about it. We'll find another way to get it. You come first. Do you hear me?
I'm sorry about that day on the shuttle. I was mad at you, but that was dumb. You know that, right?
I do. Of course I do. None of that matters now. All that matters is that you come home.
The signal began to break up again.
Gwyn?
Gwyn? I lied, Devi, when I said I was okay. I'm not. Me, the girl who doesn't believe in lying, even to spare people's feelings. I was giving it a try because you sound like you have more than enough to deal with right now. But I can't do it. There's something terribly wrong with me. I'm going to need your help. You have to come home. You have to help me.
Gwyn. Sorry. That last... What?
Devi? Devi!
Gwyn? If you can hear me. The others, they won't understand. You have to make them understand, okay?
A loud burst of static interrupted. Gwyn rose from her seat at the terminal and slammed the station hard enough to free it from its brackets. This time it didn't work. The connection was lost. A new urgency welled within Atar Gwyn that had nothing to do with a perfect mate. It had to do with a loss that was much more immediate. There was no reasoning with Devi at this point. She was about to do something incredibly stupid, and somebody needed to stop her. But Gwyn couldn't do that unless she could prove that she was fit to return to duty. And there was only one way to make that happen. She had to complete the Finis Ral. DK-1116. Once the comm channel was lost, most likely due to Galen's less-than-optimal orbital position, Devi Patel switched Lazarin's tricorder out of transmission mode and into receiving mode. Vincent and Japel had joined her and Lazarin at the top of the catwalk, nearest to the field generator. They were as close as they could physically get to the hard line Commander Torres was about to turn into a transport conduit. The relief of the rest of her team was palpable. Until the comm line had been successfully established and Torres had concocted her rescue plan, they had begun to resign themselves to the inevitable. It had made Vincent cranky and Japel a little manic, but Lazarin had begun to retreat into himself. Only now, with rescue a few minutes away, was he smiling again. He was focused with great intensity on making sure they had done all they could on their end to ensure a successful transport. The clock on the system failure had wound down to less than 6 hours. They'd been advised that all personnel had been safely recovered from the surface, so there was no longer any fear that anyone would die when the energy fields fell. But Patel knew there were other problems. She didn't know what they were, but the tone of her interactions with Captain Chakotay and Commander Torres and the specifics of the rescue mission had given her pause. The energy buildup on the surface might be connected to the failure of the fields, but she doubted it. Something else had gone wrong, but no one was going to tell Patel or her team, most likely because there was nothing they could possibly do about it. She had been ordered to abandon all of the data she had collected, to simply commit as much as she could to memory. Which meant there was no way another team would be sent later to retrieve what was about to be lost. But Vincent and Japel had managed to fill every bit of memory in their tricorders with the data on dozens of species that had experimented with the Edramaya on the planet. Patel had filled hers with data collected from the cavern and its many moving parts. Devi Patel was not one to refuse a direct order. It went against everything she believed about her role as a Starfleet officer and every instinct she had developed during her years at the Academy and in service. But this one needed to be refused. She searched her heart over and over as she created the link between the three data-filled tricorders and added the one piece of additional information that would allow her to put her plan into action. She wanted to believe her motives were pure, that this was a sacrifice made on the altar of gathering knowledge, Starfleet's core mission. Fame, glory, these had never interested her. They were fleeting illusions at best. The action she was about to take wasn't going to lead to either of those. Time and again during the last few years, as she had wilted in the shadows cast by Seven and the other senior staff, Patel had wondered what she had to do to prove herself. It seemed like there were a million tiny things she should have done differently. What she realized as she stood in the cavern, surrounded by scientific mysteries and data that would keep the Federation's brightest minds pushing new boundaries for decades to come, was that sometimes it wasn't all the little things. Sometimes the difference between being a good officer and a great one came down to a single choice. The fleet's commanding officers had decided that if the choice was between rescuing her team and securing the knowledge they had accumulated on this mission, the team came first. Patel disagreed, but there was no time to convince them of that, and had she pushed any harder than she already had, it might have raised suspicion. Patel knew that being part of a team meant subsuming one's personal needs to the greater good. The Vulcans had a pithy saying for it, "The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few." In seeking to stand out among her peers, Devi had been seeking acknowledgement of her abilities. What she saw now with perfect clarity was that there was nothing for her to gain in this moment, or any day that would follow, that could compare to the secrets she had helped uncover. This treasure trove of data was more important to Starfleet than Patel would ever be. And she was going to make damn sure they received it. Galen. Dr. Sal was at a complete loss. She stared open-mouthed at the terminal filled with Ensign Gwyn's biological data and, for the first time in her life, wondered if she needed to reconsider her general tendency to dismiss miracles as the purview of fanciful minds. The doctor updated the readings once again to make sure what they were witnessing was accurate. He shook his head as he did so, no doubt filled with the same misgivings that were currently accosting Sal.
According to these readings, Ensign, your hormone levels have returned to normal, and the metamorphic cells within your body have fallen below 1%.
Gwyn smiled with absolute confidence.
I told you, Doctor. A few minutes ago, something changed.
The need, the hunger, they simply went away. I started to feel like myself again. The doctor turned to Sal.
Could this be some sort of temporary reprieve? A natural fluctuation in the process of the Finis Rahl?
I have no idea, Sal said. I suppose. It's also possible that since this change was brought about by unnatural circumstances, her body is reverting to its normal levels. She might have been experiencing a false metamorphosis, in the same way sometimes pregnancy tests result in false positives.
The metamorphic cells have all but vanished from her system.
I can see that, Doctor.
I need to return to Voyager, Gwyn insisted. I need to get back to my post.
We'll clear you for duty soon enough, Ensign, the doctor said, but we're going to want to make sure we're seeing a permanent stabilization.
Gwyn sat up and swung her legs over the side of the biobed. I know this crisis has passed. Personally, I think Icheb deserves a lot of the credit. He helped me hold on to myself through the worst of it. I'm sure I could never have recovered without his help. Counselor Cambridge stood a few paces back beside Icheb, who stared at Gwyn with faint disbelief. Sal didn't know what the look on the ensign's face meant, but it was one of several pieces of the puzzle before her that wasn't fitting easily into place. The doctor placed a reassuring hand on Gwyn's shoulder.
You can't return to Voyager at the moment. Our ship is about to depart the system. Admiral's orders. But by the time we have regrouped with the rest of the fleet, I'm sure we'll be able to get you back on duty.
May I speak with you, Doctor?
Icheb asked, passing meaningful glances to both Sal and Cambridge in the process.
Of course. Rest, Ensign Gwyn. We'll be back in a few moments.
Sal spared one last glance at Gwyn before following the others into the doctor's private office. Whatever had happened to Gwyn should have felt like a reprieve. She had no idea why it didn't. As soon as the door to the doctor's office slid shut behind him, Icheb released a torrent of words he had clearly been biting back during Gwyn's exam.
She's not lying, exactly. But the Finis Rahl didn't just end. She ended it. I don't know how exactly, but she did.
What are you talking about, Icheb?
The doctor asked.
Gwyn. She was speaking to Lieutenant Patel. She was upset, but I don't know why.
Lieutenant Patel is one of four officers still trapped on the planet, Ensign,
Cambridge advised him.
I believe a team will be dispatched to rescue them shortly.
When her conversation with Patel was over, Gwyn wouldn't talk to me,
Icheb continued.
She had the strangest look on her face, like she had decided something. Then she went back to look at the baby again, and when she came out, she was herself again.
The baby?
Sal said, suddenly concerned. The doctor pulled up a new set of readings on his display.
I've been monitoring her life signs constantly, Dr. Sal. There is no cause for worry. She's fine. See?
Sal studied the various readings of the embryonic monitor for a moment. They were, just as the doctor said, all well within normal limits.
How did you and Ensign Gwyn find out about our youngest patient?
The doctor asked Icheb, his disappointment clear.
Gwyn was restless, wandering around, poking her head into the private rooms, and we found the incubator. I'm sorry, Doctor. I won't tell anyone, of course. And I'm sure Gwyn won't either. But it was so strange. The look on her face when she saw the baby. And then she said something about wanting to talk to her mother. Of course, that's impossible right now.
A sudden shot of adrenaline began at the base of Sal's neck and poured down her torso and limbs.
The baby.
A smile began to play over her lips as a new idea burst into her brain. 500 years ago, the women of Krios had decided to take their genetic destiny in their own hands. They had refused en masse to continue bonding with the men of their society, and yet they hadn't died. At least most of them hadn't.
Dear gods, she thought, how did I never think of it before?
The period of unrest following the dawn on Krios should have resulted in plague-like death tolls, with entire populations refusing bonding, but there was nothing like that in the records she'd seen so many decades earlier. So they didn't die. They bonded with someone. Just not their perfect mates. An embryo. An infant who had yet to develop a personality or any preferences beyond the most basic survival instincts had been the one creature with whom the completion of the Finisral did not have to result in the concurrent death of one's own identity. And Sal could easily see the pregnant women of Krios deciding to give this gift to their suffering sisters, in the name of creating a better future for all of them.
I know what she did,
Sal said softly, before hurrying toward the office door. As it slid open, Sal called,
Ensign, I must...
But she paused when she realized that the room was empty. Cambridge was right behind her. He immediately called out,
Computer, locate Ensign Gwyn.
Ensign Gwyn is not on board.
DK-1116 Commander Tom Paris worked as quickly as the bulky gloves of his EV suit would permit. The shuttle flight to the surface had been more challenging than he had anticipated. The energy buildup on the planet was altering its gravitational pull. The last readings he'd seen suggested that the rate of rotation of the planet was also increasing. Paris understood, of course, that planets didn't do that. But the more Seven and Harry had told him about DK-1116, the less convinced he was that this truly was a planet. All he wanted was to complete this rescue mission and feel the firm deck plating of Voyager beneath his feet once again. To do that, he had 6 minutes to get the pattern enhancers appropriately calibrated and to fill the small force field he had activated around them with breathable atmosphere. It felt like a lifetime ago that he had been splashing in the lake with his daughter and roasting marshmallows. In truth, it had been less than 15 hours. Once this was over, he and the rest of the fleet's senior officers were going to spend a great deal of time figuring out how a simple exploratory mission had gone to hell so quickly, and he would work as hard as any of them, assuming he lived long enough to see it. He refused to think about Miral and Michael, and the fact that both of their parents were currently involved in a life-threatening emergency situation. Every time he did, his hands started to shake, and that wasn't helpful. He'd barely had time to kiss them quickly before leaving them in the care of Kula. He was going to see them again. There was no acceptable alternative.
Are the enhancers stable?
B'Elanna asked.
Working on it.
I'm going to make final contact with Patel's team before I cut the comm channel completely.
I'm guessing they couldn't be more ready to get off this rock.
They're not the only ones. Just stabilize that field. We'll be back home before you know it.
I love you.
I love you more. The heat in the main cavern had gone from pleasant to oppressive in the last few hours. Lieutenant Kent Lazarin felt the layer of sweat covering his skin, even though the fabric of his uniform was designed to minimize perspiration. He wondered idly if the slight increase in radiant intensity he perceived from the living ore all around him was his imagination. There was no longer any way to check. His tricorder was being used to maintain their comm signal, and Patel had confiscated the others. She seemed to be studying the data on them the way she had probably prepared for every test she had taken in her life. It was a shame the data was going to have to stay behind for now, but he had no doubt that Captain Chakotay would prioritize returning to this chamber and taking even more detailed readings as soon as they could figure out how to do it safely. They were still at the beginning of weeks of exploration, after all. Even without the protective energy fields, there was still much to study on the surface of the planet. This was simply a hiccup in what was going to prove to be an incredibly productive mission. Vincent and Japel had seated themselves on the landing nearby, with their backs to the cave wall. Both of them looked weary. He understood. There wasn't much either of them could do at the moment but wait. He wished Devi could relax. This part was going to be over soon enough, and the recognition she so desperately craved when this mission began was sure to be hers. Looking at her now, her head bent over, sweat dripping from her forehead, he wondered if she was ever going to see herself the way others saw her. She was an excellent officer among a team of outstanding ones, and a Starfleet career could last decades. She had plenty of time to make her mark. She just didn't realize it.
Torres to away team, do you copy?
We're here and standing by to transport, Lazarin said.
I'm going to kill the comm line in a second. Each of you needs to position yourself as close as you can to where Lazarin is standing right now. Without the channel, I won't be able to confirm each transport. Just hang in there. It will be a few minutes between each one. But we'll get you all out of there.
We'll be ready, Commander, Lazarin said.
Commander Torres, Patel interjected at the last second. My team goes first.
Understood. See you soon. Torres out.
Lazarin exchanged a glance between Vincent and Japel. Both of them rose to their feet. He knew that both of them wanted to ask why Patel had insisted that they be rescued first, but neither of them argued. He didn't want to tell them the answer if they hadn't guessed it already. This was an untested transporter protocol. It was less than 100% guaranteed to succeed. The first would be the riskiest because it had never been done before. By the time they got to Patel, they'd either have the process down to a science or have abandoned it as impossible. It looked like a small act of bravado on Patel's part. In truth, it might have been the most selfish thing she had done since this mission began. He was not a pessimist by nature. He decided that right now that was a good thing. Handing his tricorder to Devi, he stood still and closed his eyes. If these were the last few moments of his life, he preferred to spend them in silent contemplation of all the things that had brought him joy. He focused inward and thought of home, his family, and his dearest friends. The next thing he knew, the tingle of the transporter beam took him. Voyager.
What do you mean Ensign Gwyn is on a runabout headed for the surface? Harry Kim demanded.
Lieutenant Waters shrugged her shoulders.
You think I would make that up at a time like this?
Kim looked to Chakotay, who remained as ever the calm at the center of the storm. Admiral Janeway stood beside him, but moved closer to operations at Waters' response.
We'll recover Ensign Gwyn and the runabout, Chakotay said more evenly than Kim could have managed.
Do we know what precipitated this? Janeway asked.
Dr. Sal's voice sounded throughout the bridge.
She was in brief contact with Lieutenant Patel. Ensign Icheb believes that she is concerned about Patel's safety.
Is she physically able to fly? Chakotay asked. Her last medical report indicated she was off duty until further notice.
Her physical health seems fine. I can't say the same for her mental health, Commander Cambridge reported.
Chakotay turned to Janeway, who said,
Demeter has already left the system. Galen is to do so at once, as is Vesta. Don't worry about transporting back to your respective ships now. We'll deal with that once the fleet is safe.
Affirmative responses came quickly from each of the two remaining ships. Chakotay then ordered a channel open to Gwyn's stolen ship. Runabout Okinawa.
Ensign Gwyn, this is Captain Chakotay. Please respond.
Gwyn considered maintaining calm silence, but thought better of it. She didn't think they would shoot her down, but she had technically stolen a ship, so the option was on the table.
Gwyn here, Captain.
Alter your course and make for Voyager immediately. We have officers on the surface in the process of rescuing Lieutenant Patel and her team. They do not require your assistance. The moment the rescue is complete, Voyager will be setting course out of the system at maximum speed. The longer you delay our departure, the greater the risk that no one on the ship will survive. Do you understand?
Gwyn did, all too well. Even the runabout scanners were humming and nearly overloading with the amount of data the planet was kicking off. A massive buildup of energy was occurring. As best Gwyn could tell, it wasn't localized to any particular area. It was coming from the entire planet. Shifts in gravity and the planet's rotation were playing hell with her navigational controls. She hadn't even reached the atmosphere yet, and already the ship was roughly buffeted by gravimetric distortions. At best, this was going to be one of the roughest rides of her life. She maintained course anyway as she responded.
I'm sorry, Captain, but I can't alter course just yet. I am moving into position to rescue Lieutenant Patel.
I gave you an order, Ensign,
Chakotay barked.
Refuse, and you subject yourself to disciplinary action and a possible court-martial.
I understand, Captain, and am more than willing to face the consequences of my actions, just as soon as this mission is complete.
This mission is unnecessary, Ensign. Lieutenant Patel will be back on board Voyager in the next few minutes. The best way to preserve her life and yours is to be back here when she arrives.
Gwyn thought before she spoke again. There was always a chance she was wrong, and if so, Devi shouldn't suffer for Gwyn's misguided hubris. But neither should Voyager's entire crew.
Captain, it is not my intention to risk anyone's life but mine. Should Patel return in the next few minutes as you have indicated she will, set course out of the system and I will do my best to rendezvous with you. Don't wait on me.
The next voice to sound through the comm wasn't Chakotay's. It was the Admiral's.
Ensign Gwyn, why are you refusing a direct order from your commanding officer?
Because I know when my friends are lying to me, didn't feel like an appropriate response, or one that would move Admiral Janeway.
I'm sorry, Admiral. I have reason to believe that Lieutenant Patel will require means of rescue beyond those you have put in motion.
An alert blared from her console. Voyager had just activated her tractor beam and was attempting to lock on to the runabout. Evading the beam required altering to a more treacherous angle of atmospheric entry, but she executed the maneuver with relative ease.
Damn it, Devi, she thought furiously.
The conversation they were going to have when this was over was going to be incredibly unpleasant. Gwyn looked forward to it. DK-1116 Commander Torres's heart pounded, but her hands remained steady as the first transport cycle of her hastily rigged mechanism was completed. Lieutenant Lazarin stood within the force field, smiling with obvious relief. Before he had a chance to offer his thanks, Torres signaled Voyager, and he disappeared again in a cascade of light.
One down. Three to go.
She had barely begun resetting the system when the ground beneath her feet began to shake. Voyager.
What's happening? Admiral Janeway asked.
Seven stood at the bridge's rear science station and was the first to respond.
Several of the growths we detected on the surface have completed new circuits with existing deposits of ore. Their presence has increased the speed of the buildup of energy exponentially. Our initial estimate of 5 additional hours of stability is no longer accurate. 2 of the existing biodome fields have fallen, and the others will follow within the next half hour.
Transporter room to the bridge. Lieutenant Lazarin has arrived safely.
Acknowledged,
Chakotay responded.
Large areas of the surface, including the location of our away team, are experiencing tremors,
Seven added.
Chakotay to Torres. B'Elanna, you're going to need to hurry.
DK-1116 Commander Paris fell to his knees as the ground beneath his feet shifted. The pattern enhancers had been planted several feet into the surface as a precaution using the same excavation tech they had brought to expose the hardline. For the moment, they held position, but Paris didn't think that was going to be the case in another few minutes.
Honey?
Relax, Torres advised him. The signal has a wider capacity than I thought. I'm going to bring Vincent and Japel up together.
That sounds like a great idea.
Tom waited, the seconds stretching out into lifetimes as he monitored the force field's stability around the enhancers. 20 meters beyond his wife, their shuttle sat on a desolate plain. Behind it, the sky, which was already a dusty brown, was darkening. Paris wasn't sure he wanted to know, but he aimed his tricorder at the horizon anyway. It confirmed that a large, electrically charged dust storm had formed a few dozen kilometers from their position and was heading their way. It shouldn't interfere with their return to Voyager, but it would hamper any effort to leave the surface via their shuttle, should that prove necessary. He didn't want to scare B'Elanna. She needed to focus on what she was doing. He was scared enough for both of them anyway. Lieutenant Patel watched as Vincent and Japel vanished in a flutter of transporter energy simultaneously. If Torres was risking a double transport, that meant conditions on the surface were likely getting worse. As much as she had anticipated this moment over the last hour, now that it had come, she faltered momentarily. She didn't want to die, especially alone on an alien planet. And maybe there would be another way to retrieve the data she had collected. As she began to shake, Gwyn's voice rose in her mind.
You know, if you get your ass out there and discover a brand new element yourself, maybe that'll change.
Patel's response now was the same as it had been only a few days earlier.
No, it won't, she said aloud.
There were likely only seconds left to her. She detached her comm badge and placed it on the tricorder, activating the final program she would ever create as a Starfleet officer. A quick bit of code that made the device transmit her life signs, and placed the linked tricorders on the ground Torres would target with her transporter beam. Patel then turned and moved quickly back down the catwalk, away from rescue, away from life, and toward her final few hours of existence. As she did, she felt certainty mingled with remorse. She didn't allow herself to turn back, even as she heard the sound of the transporter beam activate and take what had become her life's work back to the surface of the planet. Commander Paris stared inside the force field, dumbstruck. It had grown darker in the last few minutes, but all he could focus on were the three small tricorders B'Elanna had just transported up.
What the hell?
Tom asked. Tom dropped the field and collected the tricorders. Shaking his head, he held up a comm badge.
I don't think she's coming back, B'Elanna.
Torres shook her head as Paris dropped the tricorders into one of his suit's outer pockets.
Reactivate the force field. I'm going to try one more time.
Paris did as he had been instructed.
Chakotay to away team. What's the holdup? Where is Lieutenant Patel?
Patel sent up her data, sir, Paris replied. We're attempting to establish another lock on her. It's not working! B'Elanna cried. I've got nothing!
As Paris struggled to accept this unacceptable proposition, the ground shuddered again as a wide crack opened, tipping the shuttle forward into it. Seconds later, the gray sky turned black. Tom stumbled to B'Elanna and grabbed both her wrists.
It's over, he said. We're done here. I have enough power for one more transport. I'm not leaving her behind.
B'Elanna, she wanted you to leave her behind.
Chakotay, away. Can't acquire transporter lock. Stand.
Paris was pretty sure the end of that message was bye. The odds of success when they had accepted this mission had been long, and were moving rapidly into impossible territory.
If they can't transport us up, we have to get back to the shuttle now.
He could barely see his wife's face through their helmets, but he could easily imagine her stricken expression. B'Elanna sucked at failing. She took every loss personally. But that didn't change reality.
Give me 1 second!
Tom watched as B'Elanna initiated the final transport. Seconds later, the area inside the force field was still empty, and the power cells for the portable transporter faded to blackness.
Damn it!
Torres said.
It's now or never, B'Elanna, Tom reminded her.
Side by side, linked at the elbows, Tom Paris and B'Elanna Torres struggled for every step as they made their way back to the shuttle. Tom wasn't sure how its systems had been affected by that last quake, or how he was going to get it fired up. He just knew if he didn't, he and his wife were going to die on this planet.
Voyager.
Gwyn was right, Admiral Janeway said softly. Patel intentionally sabotaged her own rescue.
Where is Ensign Gwyn's runabout now?
Chakotay asked. Kim had resumed his position at the tactical station and replied,
She is headed for the coordinates where Patel's team first transported down. That biodome field fell a few minutes ago, and all of the water has evaporated from the surface. She won't be able to land safely, much less mount a rescue on foot now.
We don't need her to land, Chakotay said. Open a channel.
Okinawa. Gwyn was having trouble making sense of the new surface readings that were populating her display screens. The surface of DK-1116 looked nothing like it had the first time she'd seen it, and barely resembled the landscape recorded in the fleet's database on the biodome Patel's team had been assigned to study. All she could see below was a massive hole at the bottom of what looked like a giant staircase. She was in the process of focusing her transporter's scanners on any detectable human life signs when Chakotay's voice came over the comm.
Okinawa, this is Chakotay. You have to alter course.
Not yet, Captain, Gwyn replied, marveling at her reckless bravado. She had always nurtured a rebellious streak, but her actions now were so far beyond any acceptable boundaries she almost didn't recognize herself. It had something to do with the bonding. Terrifying as the prospect had been, the absolute contentment and resolve that had washed over her when she had opened herself up to the tiny life that would someday become Nancy Conlon and Harry Kim's daughter had altered her forever. Until that moment, nothing in Gwyn's world had been as important to her as her own life. Her determination to rescue Patel had been an instinct driven as much by avoiding loss for herself as ensuring Devi's survival. The few times her mother and her Leedy had spoken to her about the empathic metamorphs, they had told her that the process, while difficult to contemplate and horrific in its way, was said to be a positive one for those who accepted it. The stability of their lives post-bonding was well documented, as was their productivity and general well-being. They spoke of living for their mates, and usually their lives ended not long after those they bonded with. It was impossible to imagine for those who never experienced it, and most agreed that the sacrifice of one's identity was much too high a price to pay. But now Gwyn could acknowledge from personal experience that what might have been lost paled in comparison in some ways to what had been gained. Gwyn's life had a new purpose. Her love and devotion to a being not yet fully formed was absolute. It went so far beyond anything she had ever wanted for herself, including her career, that she wondered how she had ever found the will to live until she had known what it was to live for another. That broadened perspective made her commitment to Patel's rescue equally intense. She knew what she had to do. She understood what it truly was to be of service to another. Her priorities were in perfect sync with her deepest self, and the sense of empowerment, that calm, still certainty at the center of her being brought, dimmed any fears she might have for the consequences of her current course.
Ensign Gwyn, listen to me very carefully, Chakotay continued. Commanders Torres and Paris are still on the surface, not far from your position and in need of emergency transport. We can't get a lock from orbit. The interference is scrambling our transporter signals.
What about Devi? Gwyn asked.
Lieutenant Patel sabotaged her own rescue. If you can retrieve her, do so, but Tom and B'Elanna are also in danger. I am sending you their last coordinates now. We will await your return as long as possible.
That her mission had just become harder did not alter Gwyn's certainty. As the new coordinates appeared on her navigation panel, she replied, Understood, Captain. I'm on my way. DK-1116 Devi Patel stumbled and pitched forward onto the catwalk as a deafening crack sounded from somewhere overhead.
What the hell was that?
Her words echoed around her as the cavern grew brighter and dust descended from above like gentle rain. She grabbed the nearest railing and felt it vibrating in concert with the movement within the planet. Looking down, she watched as the bright conduits of dancing ore began to move less randomly. The slack that had been present and created the illusion of undulating snakes decreased as the heavy lines seemed to tense and shorten. Her teeth began to ache as a distinct hum, emanating from below, moved through her. For a moment, she wished for her lost tricorder. She couldn't make sense of what she was seeing and doubted it would help, but the instinct to understand was apparently going to remain with her until she breathed her last. Far down, she could see the giant spider's legs moving with precision as they altered large strands of ore, connecting them in new patterns whose purpose Patel couldn't begin to guess. Whatever was happening, she did not doubt for a moment that it was intended by whoever created this place. Despite the desire of those who had come here before seeking understanding, she saw now how futile their efforts had been.
"We're not ready to harness power like this," she said.
She doubted their predecessors had been either. But one thing was certain. She alone, of all of them, would see the frightful design of the Edremaya in all of its glory. It wasn't all she might have hoped for, but it was hers. If there was anything eternal in a human life, she paused to hope that whatever she had gained here would go with her into whatever infinity held. Tom and B'Elanna could barely see more than a few inches in front of them. Their only confirmation that they were headed for their shuttlecraft came from the display panels in the arms of their suits that were keyed to the shuttle's transponder.
"Where is it?"
B'Elanna demanded.
"According to this, we're practically on top of it," Tom replied.
Tom reached forward and felt nothing. Only then did he realize that in the storm, the shuttle had fallen farther into the crevice created by the shifting ground. There wasn't time to think about how stupid his next move was. He simply sat down on the ground and began to inch forward until his legs fell over the side of the new hole that had claimed his only way off of this rock. Swinging his legs back, he oriented himself onto his stomach and pulled himself to the point where he could see over the edge. There was nothing to see but inky darkness, but his display confirmed that the shuttle was resting 10 meters below.
"I'm going to try to activate the shuttle's emergency transporter," B'Elanna said.
"You'll never get a lock in this mess."
"You'd rather jump for it?"
"I'd probably break both my legs when I landed."
"Forget your legs. You'll shatter your spine."
"I could use a little positive thinking right about now," Tom said.
B'Elanna didn't answer. Tom pulled back and looked up. B'Elanna had lifted her arm and was pointing it at the heavens above.
"What are you doing?"
"There's something up there."
"How do you know?"
Before she could answer, a sick sensation hit Tom's gut as the lights of B'Elanna's EV suit vanished. Okinawa. The next thing Tom Paris knew, someone was pushing him forward.
"What the?"
The grime on his faceplate was so heavy that he had missed the moment when he had been transported aboard what appeared at first to be his shuttle. He quickly removed his helmet, only to hear Ensign Gwyn shouting at him.
"Clear the pad!" she ordered.
B'Elanna had already stepped into the forward section of the runabout and removed her helmet and gloves. She pushed Tom into the nearest seat and took the one opposite him.
"What are you doing here, Ensign?"
Paris asked.
"Not that I'm complaining, mind you."
"Can one of you sirs get up here and take the tactical controls?"
Gwyn asked. Torres stood and moved quickly into the seat beside Gwyn.
"What are we doing?"
she asked as she did so.
"We're going to make that hole down there a little bigger," Gwyn said. "The only thing I can get a lock on is your shuttle. Target it and fire phasers at 10%.
"Why are we destroying our shuttle?"
Paris asked.
"I need to make that hole around it bigger."
Paris looked to Torres. He didn't need to speak for her to read his mind.
"You're okay with this?"
She nodded.
"You're going to try to transport Devi, right?"
The runabout shook and dipped to the left, sending Paris careening into the bulkhead.
"There's a good chance she dies if the cavern down there collapses all around her," Gwyn said. "We're talking about a window that is only a few seconds long."
"But if we can get direct access to it at all, I should be able to lock on to any human life signs," Torres said.
"Don't wait," Gwyn said. "We're only going to get one shot at this.
I know.
Tom made his way forward until he was hovering over Gwyn's shoulder.
Adjust attitudinal control by 3%, he said.
Gwyn had been about to do so anyway.
Normally, she hated for anyone to second-guess her flying. Tom Paris was one of the few people